The Defense Department is taking a scrub brush to its acquisition regulations and getting rid of any nasty growths that have been slowing down the process over years. The Pentagon tested a handful of these changes already and is finding success in taking out layers of bureaucracy. Katrina McFarland is the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Acquisition. After her speech at the National Contract Management Association's World Congress in Dallas, she told Executive Editor Jason Miller about DOD's acquisition regulation scrubbing effort.
About a year ago, we went out to industry and said we would like to do a follow-up from a Coopers-Lybrand study that was done in the 1990s. And that study was to look at how could we eliminate bureaucracy from industry. The problem with that particular study was in the execution, they discovered that they really had a conflict of interest between the people who were conducting the study and industry because they were also from industry, those that were doing the study. So they did do what I'd call interrogatory type of comments and questions and answers, but they weren't substantiated with data. So we did a follow-up with government people who we solicited from industry, and we ended up with 11 industry members working with us from the small to large. We looked at about 6 different initiatives that we co-determined were worthy of taking a look at for our first pilot. For example, what EVM does and doesn't do, and is it consistently applied, and is there areas that we can do better? Well, at about a year in, it was very evident that our relationship with industry and doing this study really had matured, and we were getting really good data in and really good exchange, very candid, very open, and with the different participants from all the different agencies that work with industry, DCAA, DCMA, the defense procurement activity. And in the end, we are actually putting out a report that demonstrates reductions not only in full-time equivalents of people on the government side that we're going to repurpose for other work, but things that we're no longer going to ask, that we will go out with a change to the FAR and the DFARS in this particular case to adjust what we do to be more efficient and reduce costs. It will be cost avoidance for the most part, but the people will indeed be savings. And we anticipate this report to be out before the end of the year. Mr. Kendall has reviewed it, approved the results. We briefed it at the Senior Integration Group with all the service acquisition executives. And we've actually started on our second part. Now we're going to continue this, similar to what we do with Better Buying Power, to slowly carve away at next efforts. What's really interesting and rewarding is that other industries have come forward and they'd like to be part of this. And the ones that participated want to continue to participate because they see value.
Was the report focused on one specific industry? You said other industries have come forward. Do you mean like the weapon systems and now IT or vice versa?
We wanted to get more services. We wanted to have more small and medium-sized businesses, but it's all in the defense arena.
And give me a sense, the report's going to highlight some of those areas that you've made changes to and you'll make changes to in the future. You mentioned a bunch of pilots. Can you talk maybe through another one? EVM was one, maybe?
One of them is contract closeout. We're looking at what we call drain the swamp. We have a lot of backlog in that area, and we're looking at how can we literally, through a process of what we call material nature, which is looking at the substantive risk that's being taken and how can we address it through different methods to reduce our backlog with industry. We have things that are valued at less than $1,000, and we have things that are valued at billions, and we treat them the same way. There should be a materiality discussion to determine what and how much risk do we want to apply, because frankly, time is money, and some of this doesn't warrant the time we're spending.
And one of the other things you mentioned at your speech at the National Contract Management Association's World Congress event was the idea that certain approval processes, maybe you could look at the approval process and say, does this really have to go through 3 layers? Can it just go through 1 layer? And that would in itself create a better process and speed up the time it takes to get a contract to the different hurdles. Is that something that just seems so logical, but over time has just built up and caused some of the slowdowns?
Actually, it is a case of over time. Whenever we had an incident in the past, a bad actor or something that went wrong, Congress asks us to demonstrate that we will never have that occurrence happen again. The challenge within that is certain cases, it's the individual, it's not the organization, it's not the process. But in order for us to be able to respond, we create something that gives the Congress the comfort that something's taken on to address it. Well, we need to restructure and relook at how we implemented that, because in some cases, it's more than the value of what was being taken care of.
You mentioned EVM, Earned Value Management. There's an effort you guys are doing with DCAA, the Defense Contract Auditing Agency, around Earned Value Management, EVM. Can you talk a little bit about what that effort is? Is it related to this process?
Pat Fitzgerald, the previous director of DCAA, and Anita Bales, the current, have been working with us to find where we can assume a trade in terms of risk. How can we work together to make more efficient processes? Can we look at the business rather than a profit and loss center? In other words, look at the organization at the whole rather than a sum of its pieces. And we've been actually having very good success in reducing how many times we contact the industry partner, like, for example, submissions during a negotiated contract that's protracted. How many times do we want to ask for a resubmission of subcontractor costs? And how many times do we need to audit that? So there's a whole bunch of activities that we're looking at together that we're coming to consensus on how we can do those processes more efficiently.
And it's related to this whole idea of the bureaucracy and trying to kind of whittle it down and make better decisions. Is this something that DCAA understands as well? Because as you mentioned, they're auditors. They think of things in a very specific way. And some of this is, as you mentioned, compliance issues as well.
There are things that you can do to alleviate that innate risk that you're feeling, right? You can do sampling techniques. There's known statistical practices that allow for people to retain a confidence. So if there is a contracting officer who has a concern about a particular proposal, she can still or he can still call that audit in, and they can do a sampling techniques that if something comes out that shows there's a concern, they can reinstate all the processes that they use historically to manage and ensure that the system is working to where it should be in terms of risk associated with an audit. So there are things that we're coming to because we have constraints on the number of personnel. We have increased the amount of things that we've asked for audits and business practices, and we're looking at it as a materiality concern.
A lot of this that we're talking about here, it goes back to the workforce, and talk a little bit about what you guys are doing to look at some of the tools that maybe you could improve, not just the training, but also give acquisition workers the opportunity to move on up in their career and advance.
What you're talking about is talent management, right? It's how do we get the environment to create the leaders of the futures by having really clear objectives and opportunities and experience transferred to our employees. We have attrition. Everybody has attrition. We have to understand how does that fit into how we mold our workforce and what are our tools to manage understanding where our needs are in terms of weaknesses. So, for example, when we have budget cuts, they involve people. How do I ensure that the people that are being looked at to have their positions removed are the people that we can afford to lose if you're talking acquisition workforce, which is about 152,000 strong. Not very many when you take the full spread of everything that does acquisition, but it's enough people that we should be particularly concerned. That's why we call it critical acquisition billets, right? But we're actually working with the services to build in talent management. It's essentially a toolkit for the work member to look as in a career fashion, how do they go from where they are to where they want to be? And that's not just inside of the acquisition workforce. That's being taken a look at the larger human capital, and that's being done through personnel and readiness and in terms of the larger workforce. Our particular entity, Human Capital Initiative, which is led by Renee Thomas Rizzo, she, for Secretary Kendall, is looking at how to manage our acquisition workforce inside of that larger review of the workforce for talent management to ensure that our service acquisition executives and the defense acquisition executive know what the current status of our workforce is, what do we need to do to improve it for our future, and how do we mold it.
You mentioned dusting off some old tools. What are you guys looking at to say to the acquisition workforce community? Hey, don't forget, you can do other things besides just always try to hire.
So we have highly qualified experts. We have what we call IPAs. We have, like you mentioned, retired annuitants. There's a whole toolkit out there that has somewhat languished and been not used consistently in practice throughout the entire department's enterprise. And so what is going on right now is dusting off those tools, providing a standardized method to go about utilizing them, and in making sure that there is an actual education to our senior leadership down to our humblest employee at the entrance level to know that these tools are out there and how to use them. To source not only talent, but from their own career perspective, if they retire and they want to give back to the organization, how do they do that? And where can we use that to fill in the gaps where we have, particularly we've seen a bathtub effect in our workforce? We want to fill that in. Retired annuitants are a natural fit for that, same as highly qualified experts. Also, mentors and coaches. There's a lot of opportunities that we really need to have clear visibility on, and that's what's going on right now, is a complete review of that. It's being done at the very senior undersecretary level, and we expect within a year we should have a book out for people to train to and all our HR people trained up to be able to use that.
One of those tools that gets a lot of attention is that the phased retirement. Are people using it? Is that being used at DOD yet?
Well, actually, it was interesting you asked that. I just had sourced to take a look at that phased retirement with a couple of my employees. So it isn't being used consistently, but it isn't that the tool actually isn't out there. It's that employees don't quite understand how to use it and aren't comfortable with all the paperwork. So we've got to make the tools that we have also accessible to the workforce and make it clearer to them to know how to use it and what does that mean from their benefits. That particular tool, I think, was let out in 2013, if I recall, and I immediately jumped on it for a couple of my folks. In the end, they chose a different process, but I think that will become something, as people begin to understand it and see it in use, a very helpful tool.
NDAA has a ton of acquisition provisions in it. I know one of the big ones that has gotten a lot of press and a lot of discussion is really turning back old water Nichols in many ways. What's the latest on that? How closely are you guys following it?
Well, I believe we've put in a response from the department to the House and the Senate on it. And I will say, for the most part, there is a lot of goodness in both the House and the Senate's proposals. I think there are a couple sticking points that the department has raised as far as issues. From a personal view, from my own experience, because I came in before Goldwater Nichols, I understand fully why there needs to be an enterprise view. I think just exposure to, I think, the understanding of cross-service equities and making sure that in the terms of risk and optimism, particularly in a budget decline, that we have people that are able to look at products and proposals from each of the agencies in the department writ large, have had a good scrub so that the department doesn't go awry in the future.